This episode of the Hard Drive DL is brought to you by our friends at Napa Auto Parts. Conquer the job with Napa know-how.
You're listening to Hard Drive DL, available at harddriveradio.com or download the Hard Drive Radio mobile app.
Hello, everyone. Paulie here from Hard Drive Radio, and I have to say that I am just so freaking excited to be joined in the studio today by the only man in the world who gives me beard envy, and that is the legendary Scott Ian of Anthrax.
Hi, how are you?
I mean, I want to get right into it, man. In the very first chapter of your new book,
yes,
you talk about people touching your beard and how wrong it is.
Yes.
Does it really happen that often?
It does. It does. You just, it's, when I tell people, they kind of don't, it's not that they don't believe me. They're just like, really? People do that? Like, I'm like, yeah, grow a beard. And you'll see, people just feel the need to get their hands right up in your beard. You know, sometimes at least people will ask, like dudes will ask, like, hey, man, can I grab your beard? Could I touch your beard? And I'll say, no, I'd rather not. And they get bummed, like they had an expectation that they were actually going to get their dirty hands in my beard. It's like, no, don't touch my beard.
I especially loved how you made suggestions of other beards that people could try and touch, with very important disclaimers that there is no way in hell they should ever do that.
Yeah, it's a joke when I say you should grab Kerry King or Zach Wilde's beards. That's why I put the disclaimer at the end in case anyone was to dare go out and try that. I wouldn't want anyone to get injured, nor do I want the blame for said injury.
I think anyone who would think it would be a good idea to try and grab Kerry King's beard lacks certain survival instincts.
It was just funny for me to write those sentences because the idea, like I think I said something about with Kerry King, get your hand right up in there and give him a scratch like a kitty cat. That just like those are sentences that have never been said in the history of the world. So it just made me laugh writing it.
Well, I absolutely laughed reading it too. The book is Access All Areas, Stories from a Hard Rock Life. This is actually your second book now.
Yes.
So, I mean, how did this one come about? Were there just like so many stories from I'm the Man that you didn't get in there? So you're like, maybe make a second one? Or
well, I'm the Man did well enough for me to get a second book. That's first off. Like, you don't get a second book unless number one does okay, I guess. And, but yeah, there were specifically like my poker story, which is in two parts, All In Part One and All In Part Two. It's like that's like 70 pages of story. And when I was working on I'm the Man, it wasn't going to work to suddenly have a 70-page tangent, you know, from my autobiography on. And now let's spend 4 years of me playing poker. Like there was just no way to kind of make a left turn into that world and then come back into the autobiography and get back into the flow of that story. So like specifically a story like that and some of the other stories, they were just too tangential to the flow of the autobiography. And then there's a whole bunch of other ones that are just stories I've had around. Like I keep notes on these things all the time, whether it was when I was working on I'm the Man or because when I go out and I do my talking shows. So I just keep lists of ideas and, you know, I'll literally things like I'll have a list. They'll say Kirk's Door. Oh, someday I got to write that story or, you know, just ideas like that. And that's where a lot of this came from. I said to my editor after I'm the Man was done, I said, you know, I think I have a second book. I definitely got, you know, right now 10 great stories. And, you know, if I start working on it, I'm sure I'm going to come up with more. And that's what happened. It's 23 really, I think, just killer stories that needed to be told.
I mean, when I was reading this, I read it on the train back and forth from work over the last week or so. And I know probably people were looking at me like I was nuts because as I'm reading, I'm laughing as I'm reading these stories.
Good.
It's really entertaining. And I absolutely recommend everybody pick it up because it's just really great stuff and things that are almost too good to be true. You're like, no way. This is real.
No,
but
I know.
These are real, right?
Trust me. I still think that over some of these things, and if it wasn't for people corroborating my stories or my photographic evidence of some of them, I sometimes wonder if, like, did that really happen? Like, you know, did I really hang out with Madonna? Did I really, you know, have this crazy night in Vegas with David Wells? Or that, like, there's so many of these stories that, because some of them, you know, they're not that long ago in the context of the world, but in my world, the late 80s and certainly almost all the 90s into the early 2000s, that's when I drank. I didn't drink at a younger age, like most of the 80s, at the beginning of the band. It wasn't until the 90s rolled around, early 90s into the early 2000s, I had a pretty solid 10-year run of boozing it up. And that's where a lot of this happened, you know. And then I met my wife, and we were both boozing it up, and then you realize at some point we don't need to be out 5 nights a week, and you kind of slow down. But in this time period, a lot of really, really funny stuff happened.
Actually, I did want to ask you about meeting Madonna, because that's one of the shorter stories in the book, but I feel like that's just one of those entirely surreal moments. And, you know, in my line of work, I get to talk to amazing people like you, and it's kind of cool to see someone else going through the same thing, where inside you're like, oh, hey, nice, cool to meet you. You know, inside you're freaking out, but on the outside, right, you have to be cool about it. I mean, was it interesting for you to kind of get that perspective of meeting an idol and maybe seeing how that's kind of reflected when, you know, people meet you?
Yeah, well yes, sure. I've met, at that point in time, because I think that story took place somewhere around 93-ish, something like that, and 92, 93. But so at that point, she was by far the most famous person I'd ever met. I met Paul McCartney years later, so I don't think I'll ever top that. But meeting her at the time, you know, I had met obviously lots of guys in bands, very big metal bands and stuff, but nothing close to on a level of fame like Madonna. And I was a massive fan, and I thought she was quite attractive, and just lucky enough that my friend Guy O'Siri was the guy that she picked to run her record company at the time when she started Maverick. So it was through him we went out one night in New York. We went out to dinner, and that turned into strip club, and then we went to the Limelight to see Rage Against the Machine, and that's just part of the story. But I gotta admit, I was extremely nervous, you know, to meet her. And then to up the ante, when she opened the door to her apartment, she was wearing a completely sheer top, meaning her boobs were just on display. I mean, they were just there, right there. So then I'm trying to be cool and keep eye contact, you know, and I'm having the inner monologue of looking in her eyes, looking in her eyes, looking in her eyes. And meanwhile, her boobs are looking at me saying, you can't look in her eyes. You know you're staring at us. Stop even trying to fake it. Like, so it was nuts, but she immediately disarms you because she's so nice and so super cool, and she did put a jacket on. And but she was so super cool and nice and great to be around and a lot of fun, and immediately, you know, makes you feel comfortable. Immediately you're not, it wasn't like you're in the room with some super famous person. She's just like this really cool lady, but you got to read the story to, there's a lot more than that.
There's so much more than that. It's really fantastic. One of the things I really enjoy about your writing style is how you communicate the excitement that you were feeling in that moment. The second chapter where you talk about going to see Kiss for the very first time.
Right.
Reading that story and just like how you guys, you and your friends were just so into Kiss and like, you know, lining up at the record store to get the tickets.
And sure.
All of that excitement that is in there, I was feeling that as I was reading it. I felt like I was there.
Cool. Well, thank you. I do my best when I'm writing to really kind of get it across visually. You know, everyone knows I love Stephen King, and one of his major strengths, I think, as a writer is communicating the visual and really putting you in the place and being able to feel and smell and taste and see what's happening. You almost like you're watching a movie in your brain. And certainly with that story, it's called Meet Me Under Ace Frehley. I was really trying to put people in my shoes in 1977 in the New York City that I grew up in, and what it was like then to love a band and trying to find out when a band was coming to your town and going to the record store and hounding the guy at the record store and getting tickets. And it's a whole culture. It's a whole way of life that doesn't exist anymore. And certainly that New York City of that time, which was the New York City of the movie Taxi Driver, has nothing to do with the New York City people know now. And I just realized also recently that 2 days from now, December 14th, will be the 40th anniversary of going to that show, which is insane. It was 40 years ago. But yeah, I tried very hard to communicate the feelings and the emotions and the sights and sounds of what it really felt like.
Are you one of those guys who kind of hoards everything and collects everything? I want to know, you know, do you still have that ticket stub that poster that you got that the record guy gave you?
I do have the ticket stub. I don't have the poster. I do have my T-shirt that I bought that night, and I do have the concert, the tour program as well, still from that show.
So that's awesome.
But I'm actually, oddly enough, I'm not a hoarder. Like, I wish I was. I wish I had all the ticket stubs from all the shows I saw back then and all my concert tees and all that. But no, over the years, so much of it would just get thrown out, destroyed, lost, whatever.
Yeah, unfortunately, there's only so much space for that stuff. I know, our host Lou Brutus, he obsessively collects everything. I think he has like racks of file cabinets just with everything like filed in date order.
That's amazing.
Oh yeah, he's very, into it. He loves it. When you're writing these stories, you seem like you've got a pretty good handle on everything that happened. Were there any points where you were unsure of how things went down? You had to maybe call and ask.
Yeah. Specifically the Wrath of Kirk story. That one, yeah, because when you read the story, we were very, very drunk. And I had to make some phone calls to people involved in that story. Mark Azagueda from Death Angel being one of the guys that we were texting back and forth to see if our memories matched up, and I talked to Charlie about it and like, what do you remember? Did we do this or did we do that? And what happened here and what happened there? And I think I might have texted Lars, and I texted Lars's assistant from back then, this guy, Steve Wigg. And that one I needed to kind of, I remembered the story and all the broad strokes, but a lot of the minutiae of that story, sadly, the memories were not helping me out, because like when you read the story, you'll understand why I don't remember a lot of, didn't remember a lot of the details. But, through six or seven of us, we put it all together.
Were there any stories that you started to maybe piece through together like this, and then when you got the whole picture, you thought about it, and maybe this one's not a good one for the book? Were there any like that just crossed a line that you're like, you just can't?
No, because I mean, I know my post-retirement book stories really well, and I'm kidding. I mean, but I probably do have a book's worth of stories I can't tell, unless I was retired. But even then, a lot of those stories aren't my stories to tell. They're stories I know, but in a lot of them, I wasn't actually physically there or personally involved. I just know a lot of great stories about people we all know and love. And being that they're not my stories to tell, I don't think it's my job to write those. I would certainly help other people write those stories if I was ever asked. But, I have a lot of tales that really aren't my tales. So, but I do have some of my own. And, who knows? Someday, maybe. And I would probably, out of respect to people maybe that were involved, I would never put anything out that would upset somebody. So I would certainly reach out to someone in advance if I thought it was something that might piss someone off.
Seeing as, you're now author of two books and a pretty much prolific writer for all of Anthrax as well, would you ever maybe consider another career, like you need another one, as maybe like a ghostwriter for other guys who would want to get their stories out?
On paper, it's a great idea, but writing a book is really hard. And it's a lot of work and it's very time consuming. And so the answer to that question is I would love to, but it's just schedule. Just having the time. And, at this point in my life, if I'm not on tour with Anthrax or super busy with Anthrax, I'm generally home with my family, and I'm not looking for more things to eat up my day. So, the thing about writing is you don't age out of it, really, as long as you could still think, you could write. And, it's something I intend on continuing the rest of my life in some way, shape, or form, whether it's more books that I have ideas for or, getting back into the comic world at some point I would love to do. I have a lot of ideas. Again, it's just I need to find the time. A lot of this book, Access All Areas, was written over the course of a year of being on tour for For All Kings. So basically written in dressing rooms and hotel rooms and on the bus. And I mean, so much of it was done on tour all over the world.
I think I got a real taste for how busy you are and how much you can actually accomplish when you want to do it by reading the poker stories, specifically talking right. about how much, first of all, you know, winning that charity event with pretty much zero experience.
I had never played Hold'em.
Incredible. And then, you know, getting the deal with Ultimate Betting right. and how often you played and just, what was it? I think it was the World Series of Poker tournament where you left in the middle of the tournament to go play like Rocklahoma and
yes.
then come back. Just,
it was insane.
It seems inhuman. How do you do it?
It was insane. I went from a guy, I'm not a gambler. That's why my poker story is even more of an anomaly because I'm not a gambler. It's the antithesis of my relationship with money is to lose it. I don't mind spending money on all kinds of dumb things, but just to lose it, no. It's not fun for me. That's why it makes it even odder that I became a professional poker player. And yeah, I went from someone who never, ever played poker to I was playing up to 80 hours a week sometimes online. Just insane, like literally because I really took to it. I really enjoyed it, and it kind of became like an ATM for me. It was crazy. My brain and poker just, they work. I'm kind of a math-based guy in my brain, and it really just, it connected for me.
It's incredible. And I think, you know, I'm not really much of a gambler guy either, but if I was winning all the time, yeah, I'd probably want to play more.
And it's not winning all the time. Believe me, I lost a lot too, but there was just, I wasn't playing with my own money. I was playing with the house money. I got signed by an online poker company, and it wasn't costing me a dime. They were paying me to play poker. Well, it was the greatest job ever.
even better than you know, hosting your own show for talking about, you know, horror props and, you know.
No, that's a great job too. I get paid to like be on The Walking Dead. That's another. I try and only do jobs that are really, really fun. Because for real, my day job is playing in a band, so I'm only and that's fun. So I'm only going to do things that are fun. Why would I ever do anything that really wasn't just like, yeah, let's go do that? Because you know what I mean. Like I've made my whole life ever since I like left college and stopped working for my dad in like 1982. My whole goal in life was to just only do things that I enjoyed doing, and I've been really lucky to have made that my life.
I mean, reading this book, it certainly seems like you've been very successful in having an enjoyable life. It's just,
I mean,
entertaining.
You know, the fact that I get to play guitar for a living, I play guitar in a band, I never, ever, ever take that for granted. You know, I mean, playing guitar in Anthrax enables me to do all this other stuff. I get to write books because of my life in Anthrax. And, you know, it's just given me an incredible, incredible life so far.
I think my favorite chapter, and probably everyone's favorite chapter, is going to be the conversation. And I don't want to give away too much because this one, like, I want to talk about it, but I don't want to give anything away because the payoff is just so sweet that you have to get through the whole thing. But just, you know, writing this story specifically, was it difficult to kind of look back on these times now? Because
the conversation is it's a phone call with Daryl, Dimebag Daryl. And I, from like mid-ish, late 90s, and it's basically, you know, him calling me up in the middle of the night and kind of keeping me awake for hours. And I'm not going to spoil it or give away too much, although some people know this story because I have done this story live many times in my talking show. So it's out there. It may even be on the DVD I put out a couple of years ago, the Speaking Words in Glasgow. Swearing Words in Glasgow. I put it out on a DVD. And so it's out there, so some people know it. Granted, I think it's probably a little bit more thorough writing the story than telling it. But, I never have a hard time looking back on that. It's such a moment in time that's just burned into my brain because I was friends with Daryl, and this phone conversation we had is just one of the most insane things I was ever a part of in my life.
Conversely, I think the worst chapter in the book definitely has to be Fruit Loops.
F- Fruit Loops. Well, worst, I guess, depending on what angle you're looking at.
I mean, it's a hell of a story, absolutely. But I would suggest not reading that one on a full.
Certainly not while you're eating breakfast.
Yes, no, please no. Don't do it. Also, has Trent Reznor thanked you for his Oscar yet?
No, not yet. But, you know, the book just came out. So, you know, I'm waiting. I'm expecting that phone call shortly. Not.
A good amount of these stories do involve drinking and hangovers.
Mm-hmm.
Looking back on that, do you have any regrets about it? Or
no. Zero. No. Nothing. Because I didn't do anything horrible. No, people aren't getting hurt. You know, I'm... And it, all in all, in general, I'm kind of a happy drunk. So that's why so many of these stories are really fun and funny, and most of the time me being an idiot. And I have no problem pointing the finger at myself ever. That's not something I've ever had a problem with, is admitting when I'm the idiot. And that's what a lot of this book is about. You know, I had a lot of fun in those times. And that's not to say I don't have fun. I still drink. Just not to the excesses I was in the 90s and early 2000s, for which I blame everything on Daryl, of course, my mentor in drinking. He taught me how to drink whiskey. But I'm kidding when I say I blame him. I thank him for my first black tooth.
I want to get kind of looking forward to the future, and just want to see, you know, what do you have scheduled for 2018 as far as, you know, music and writing and everything.
A lot. That's one of the things about being in a band. It's kind of like, well, here's your schedule for the next 2 years, you know. Yeah, we go back out end of January. It's Anthrax Killswitch. It's the Killthrax Part 2. The first leg went so well. The tour did great. People really loved it. People came out. So we got a sequel. So we were doing another Killthrax run starting end of January, U.S. and Canada. That takes us to the beginning of March. Then we get a short break in March and April. And then there's another tour we're probably going to do, another big U.S. thing, U.S. and Canada, like May, June, I think into July. And then we'll head over to Europe for festivals in the summertime. And then hopefully, you know, in the fall, Australia, Japan, and Pacific Rim, a headlining run through there. And that'll already then be, what, 2.5 years on Four Old Kings. And so I would assume that'll probably be your, like, the official, let's say, end of the touring cycle, and we'll really kind of then start working on new material and do one-offs here and there, but really try and focus on new songs at that point.
Any plans on filming any new Bloodworks episodes?
You know, we want to, and we have ideas. It's just really been schedule, and being able, between me and our director, Jack, and really just being able to figure out the schedule and make it happen. And we get an idea. It's like, oh, it'd be great if we could get on the set of whatever movie. And then when we're ready to do it, the movie's done. Like, they're already done filming by the time I'm free. And so it's always just comes down to schedule.
Okay. As long as there's still going to be some, you know, because I've enjoyed those very much.
Oh, thank you.
And I enjoyed this book very much. The book is Access All Areas, Stories from a Hard Rock Life. It is out now. Scott Ian, man, thank you so much for coming by. This was
cheers.
A blast.
Thank you.
More episodes of Hard Drive DL at harddriveradio.com. Download the Hard Drive Radio mobile app and keep listening.